Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Here we are once again. It's good to have you back. Good to be back. Thank you for your kind words regarding the podcast. Thank you for your continued support. It's always well appreciated. It's just nice to know that you're there and you're loving it. And there's been loads of great feedback from everybody and conversations and messages. And we're having a chat and it feels like there's a wonderful community, like I've said before, of people. Then we're building up and we're all supporting each other. And it's really nice when I see people that I know that have met via the podcast talking to each other. It really gives me a warm feeling inside. It's a beautiful thing to see. So well done. I love it. I've been getting myself out and about. I've been doing a bit of exercise, but not. I talk about this in the episode. Actually, we touched on this. I've been just getting out walking. Go what I do. I charge my headphones up, charge my phone up, put on a coat, put my shoes on, and off I go. Just marching. I go for a big old march. Go for a couple of hours. You know, if you can't do that, okay, I've only got time. Then you know, I get it. But if you can, I urge you to get outside and have a walk. I have a wander. I grab myself a coffee. And I keep walking, and then I might have a cup of tea later on, or I might not. It depends what mood I'm in. But I just find that rather than donning, you know, exercise equipment and gear and you know, to make myself feel like I'm actually doing something, I don't really need all that. As long as you're out and a bit of fresh air and having a walk, it's all you need. A bit of music, you'll be fine. Speaking of music, what you need to do, you want to get the Tuned Up Time Machine, which is on the Mixcloud app from Islington Radio. I'm telling you now. It's one of the best radio shows out there. Producer Paul and I, we cut loose and we put on a load of great music. We have a load of chat in between. It's a really good listen, and it's on the Mixcloud app. So you should get involved with that. What you've got to do is download it on your phone, and then you've got amazing radio shows from Islington Radio. You know, you've got the Sweary Witch. I can never say it, right? That's a good show. We've got the Heavy. We've got Stu Whiffins on there with his show, Off the Beaten Track. There's loads of good shows. So get involved, and the Tuned Up Time Machine is yours. You can have it. So take it. Also, we've had a lovely review from MCAN228. Hello, MCAN228. 5 stars, love these podcasts. Really interesting, insightful conversations, touching on important topics, but also light-hearted and thoroughly enjoyable. That's what we're aiming for. That's perfect. What a perfect review. If you are listening to this, you are, aren't you? Drop us a review. It does take a minute. You know, 5 stars, obviously. Don't drop us a shit one. If you don't like it, then don't listen. It's your choice. You can go away and do something else. But if you like it, please do. You know, because that pushes up the charts. Get subscribing as well. I mean, subscribing doesn't even hurt you. It just means that the things will just appear on your phone automatically. You don't have to go and seek them out. And then that pushes us up as well, and that gets us in front of more people's ears. I don't know what I'm saying, but you know what I mean. It gets us into the ears of more people. That means more people have this conversation, and it keeps going and keeps going, and more people start to feel better about the world around them. That's what we're trying to do. Bring a little bit of love in the afternoon, or the morning, or the evening, depending on when you're listening to this. Anyway, this week's guest, Mark Lemon is his name, and I became aware of him via Instagram. And he's, for want of a better phrase, he's been on such an incredible journey because you know, when he was a kid, his dad was murdered, and to, you know, where do you start with that? Where do you start to unpack that? But hard enough if that happens, you know, as an adult, but as a kid, I don't know what he must have gone through. And so I got him on the podcast to talk about it, and we really got stuck in talking about grief and the different effects that it has on different people. And you'll hear it in the episode. It's a really, really great chat, and it really opened my eyes to a lot to grief, you know, because I've not experienced it yet, not really, and I'm getting older now, so it's going to start to happen. And you know, and what, how do I prepare for it, and do I prepare for it, or you know, and then so it was a really great chat talking about that. And we also talked about Black Lives Matter and what needs to change. You know, I mean, I'm telling you, you're about to hear it. It's a really good conversation. He's a very, very lovely man that has dealt with something so awful in such a beautiful and positive way that I couldn't wait to get him on and for you to hear what he had to say. So, coming up in a bit is Mark Lemon.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
I saw your Instagram and it really touched me. And I know when I saw the picture of you, I saw the picture of your son at the grave with your father-in-law, and it stopped me in my tracks. It was something that I couldn't comprehend what you lot must be going through right now.
Mm. Yeah, it was such a big moment seeing that, you know, because he asked to be involved as well, you know, because it was a Caribbean funeral. You know, obviously they have the usual traditions and they have the rum at the you know, the graveside. Yeah. And, you know, normally you're supposed to pour it, but they were all drinking it. But that was funny. But then all the guys, you know, took a shovel and they were digging and filling the grave. And he said, oh, Dad, would you mind if I had a go? And I was like, no, of course.
Yeah.
So, a friend of mine took the picture and it just, honestly, for the whole day, obviously it was really difficult for all of us, but to see him doing that and how proud his granddad would be of him to kind of have the courage to do it, you know, was really special. And obviously and kind of as well, something resonated with my own dad and sort of going back to the funeral from when he died, you know. Kind of, a lot of things kind of really resonated with that image, like you said.
Yeah, it was a beautiful thing. You're saying goodbye to a loved one, but it was a sort of, it was a celebration at the fact that they'd been here in the first place, and you know, and everybody had gathered round to do their bit to send them off in the most perfect way. I've not seen that before. I've not been to many funerals, but I'd never seen sort of that. It was a beautiful thing, and
it was,
And I'm, you know, grief has come up before on here. We had Ishan Akbar a little while ago, and he was talking about when he lost his mum and how the grief doesn't go away. He said, what it's like, it's like a box. And in that box is a button, and the button is the grief. And in the box is this ball that's forever pushed onto the button. So the button's always pushed down. But as you go along, the ball starts to get smaller in the box. And so the button gets released a little bit, but then the ball bounces round in this box, and every now and again it'll push the button, and you'll feel it again. So you don't like I saw your what you said, the letter you wrote to your 12-year-old self, saying like it doesn't the pain won't it gets better, but it doesn't go. You know, you just find a way of carrying it round.
Yeah,
you know.
It's that analogy is perfect. You know, and I think. And I've heard that one as well. And it's just, you know, and I kind of call it a coat. You know, on some days it's heavier, on others it's lighter. And, you know, but it's a coat you'll always wear. And and it's sort of, I think a lot of people sometimes don't realise that grief is like that. You know, it doesn't go away. And you just learn to live with it, really.
But some people feel, like my partner, she lost her sister to a brain tumour. And sometimes, like, she talks about her sister every single day. Mm. And we joke sometimes, you know, we make jokes about her, go, blimey, it's not even lunchtime and you're talking about her, you know, like, to sort of lighten the mood. But sometimes I feel she feels embarrassed that she's still, there's a tiny amount of embarrassment that she's still grieving, you know. And it's like you've said, it just, you will always grieve. You will always miss that person.
Yeah. I've had that last year. We had an article, and it was, you know, the Daily Mail being what it is, but it was in the Daily Mail, and it was to do with a book that I'd sent to Prince Harry. You know, they always say don't read the comments, but I read like two or three and that was it for me. But you know, someone was like, oh, you know, this happened years ago, you should be over it by now, you know.
Yeah,
what's he still banging on about this for, you know? And it was like, okay, until you've walked in someone's shoes and you felt that pain, you don't know. You know, and you know, I'd like to think that whoever has written that or said that comment hasn't actually experienced that themselves, because it's only until you feel that you really do understand that. You know, it's a taboo subject in this country. It's one that we really do shy away from. It's one that we don't know how to approach. We don't know how to talk to people about. More often than not, it's our own sort of insecurity and. You know, just, you don't want to upset the person, which is fair enough. You know, if it's someone you love, you don't want to make them upset, you don't want to make them cry. But, you know, I always say that they felt the most unimaginable pain already. So what are you going to do? You know, how worse are they going to feel? You know,
yeah.
And I'm sure it's like, you know, like you say with your partner, you know, it's like, you know, they want to talk about them. It's our way of continuing the legacy.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, one of the things that Jay told me that her sister had said at the end was like, I just don't want to be forgotten. And I was, oh, wow, it really hit me. And then like we joke now, and like, you know, you go, well, of course she'll be forgotten. Don't stop banging on about her. You know, it's that, there's a humour there and we have a laugh. But yeah, continuing to talk about these people because they did touch you. They made an impact on you. And it's important to keep those conversations going.
Yeah, it is. And it's also important to teach children that, you know. I think that's more often than not, as adults, we sort of sweep it under the carpet, or, you know, after a couple of years, you're expected to move on with your life and continue. And so if we're teaching our children that, what are they going to do with that grief? And it's just a cycle that just continues. And that is where I always kind of link mental health to grief, is because a lot of children, a lot of adults, you know, don't talk about it, and it manifests and it goes somewhere. And how does that manifest, and what does it do? And it turns into like anxiety, sadness, anger, you know, all of these natural emotions that will just kind of pop up later on in life. And so, yeah, that's also why I talk about it a lot, is because I don't want that teenager to wander around like I did, you know, feeling that sort of mental health struggles. And also not really understanding why I'm feeling like that, you know, because it's not perceived as a mental health problem. So you're like, okay, I'm just continuing with my life. But yeah, I feel all these strange feelings that I've never addressed because the adults around me didn't know how to support, you know?
Yeah. Well, that was it. When I was growing up, death was, I never got taken to any funerals when relatives passed on. It was always... kind of, you were kind of, you know, oh, you know, they've just gone somewhere else. You know, they didn't really explain that they're not here anymore. And one day you won't be here anymore. And I remember the day I realized that my parents were going to die one day. And I'm like, oh, and I just was sitting on the bed and just sobbing.
because I hadn't been told about it. I just discovered it on my own. And so that was, which is why it was a beautiful thing when I saw your son with the grave, and he was helping fill in the grave. And I was like, oh, this is how it should be. You're showing exactly what goes on. It was a really beautiful thing.
I said to my wife yesterday, I'm so pleased that they were there. You know, it was Otis and Thea, my children, and then their cousin was there as well. And I just thought it was really nice for the three of them to experience that, because, like you say, we don't tend to involve children. I know in a lot of societies, a lot of countries, children do go to attend the funerals and they are part of that. And I think when you're sort of involved in that at a young age, you start to build a better understanding of kind of not being afraid of death, but understanding the process of it, you know, you know, I remember I the only funeral I had ever been at as well was my dad's. And then other than that, you weren't really invited because, you know, it was like no children allowed sort of thing. And so then you have all these kind of thoughts as to what happens at a funeral, how are you supposed to act, how are you supposed to be, I don't know. Yeah, it can be quite difficult, really.
Yeah, I do like the people that, like I say, they celebrate the life. They're not, instead of mourning the fact that the people have gone, it's like, wow, but then they, you know, you look around and there's a huge congregation and you're like, wow, they touched all these people. This is how special this person was. All these people have down tools and gone, I just want to go and pay my respects to this person that touched my life for however long it was. And that's what we need to do, encourage the celebration, you know?
I was watching a great program the other day about New Orleans and how, you know, on the way to the sort of, I guess, procession, on the way to the funeral, you have all the wailing and the crying and all of this. And then on the way back, it's like a festival. They're all just dancing, you know, singing. And I think it's that kind of approach that would be amazing to try and adapt, you know,
I mean, I can't speak for other countries, but in my experience, British people were very, you know, stiff upper lip and hold it together and, you know, just be respectful. And it's like, you know, we're saying goodbye and that's what we're doing. It's like, yeah, but I remember working at a funeral parlour about 20 years ago and I remember being at the grave and we turned up early and it was very early in the morning. So it was like a film. So there was mist on the ground. And the sun wasn't up very long and we were preparing the grave and it was for a black family. And all of a sudden, from all directions, people started appearing out of the mist, but they were singing a song. And it was like a really low, I don't know what the song was, but it was one of the most sensational things I've ever experienced in my life.
Yeah.
And they came from all sides and they were all sort of humming and singing the same song, and then they just all gathered around the grave and then they were all kind of swaying and still singing the song. And I had tears, I was sobbing with a weird feeling of happiness and sadness, and it was odd and great at the same time. And so more a celebration should be what we're doing.
It should be. And I think that's why, you know, the conversation, that's why I'm so passionate, obviously, about talking about this subject so much, is because, you know, we do have a lot of people out there who don't know how to approach it, don't know how to talk about it, you know. And so, you know, especially on my Instagram, you know, getting messages from people saying, thank you for talking about this subject, you know. And more often than not, the words that I write are my own sort of internal, you know, sort of an internal healing, if you like. Yeah. But, you know, and hopefully they resonate with other people. But when you get sort of messages saying, oh, that really connected with me, and, you know, it makes you realise how the conversation needs to keep going.
Absolutely.
Because, there is still that kind of a bit of a stiff upper lip, you know, don't know how to approach.
Yeah.
I think the pandemic has really kind of brought it out there in terms of obviously the magnitude of deaths that have happened in this country. And so you haven't been able to hide away from it, really. It's, you know, it's on the news every day, the death toll, and, you know.
Yeah.
And so people kind of have had to think about it a bit more, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's funny, this, because before COVID, these people were just going about their lives. They had no idea, you know, that they were suddenly going to be taken by this mystery illness. And and I did some gigs for troops. and I did a gig at one of their hospitals. And so I went there, go out and meet everybody before the gig, go and acclimatise. And so I walked out and there was a young girl coming towards me on crutches and her legs were sort of dragging behind her. And I went, oh, fuck. And I went back in the office and Angie, who's the woman running it, she went, you're right. I went, I know people get ill and you know, that's nature and things happen, but someone did that to that woman, like a person, another person did that to that person. I can't get my head around that. It's just suddenly struck me. And then with COVID, like this happened and it wasn't their fault. They were just taken suddenly.
Yeah.
And like with you, with your story, you know, one day your dad was there and then he was taken by another person. And you can sort of get your head around it if it's an illness. Like, you know, it's not nice. It's not great. It's horrible. Of course it is. But when someone takes that person, the feelings must be unimaginable. I can't get my head around what you must have gone through.
Yeah, I mean,
at that point,
it's such a surreal feeling. I always kind of put it as to, you know, 1 minute someone's there, you know, in the morning you're saying goodbye, see you later, and then at sort of 3:15, 3:20 in the afternoon that day, you're being told that they've died, you know, and they've gone, and that's it. You know, there's no closure, there's no understanding. You know, it wasn't an illness, you know, it wasn't something that had taken over their body and then they died and you had sort of a bit of maybe a few months to sort of at least say goodbye. It was, you know, subjected by someone else, you know, totally out of your control. And so, yeah, there's a huge amount of trauma that comes with that and you have to kind of navigate that as time moves on and try and make sense of it. And I think that's what I did. You know, I sort of always, you know, it took me a little while, but I sort of realized that I had to make peace with it in a way. I was obviously, you know, angry at the world for what had happened and that it had changed my life and my family's life forever. But I couldn't have any vengeance towards that man. Otherwise, I wouldn't be sitting here today talking to you. I probably would be somewhere else, you know. Yeah. And so I needed to let go of that. And the pandemic is kind of in a similar vein, really, in terms of, well, all of a sudden you've got them and then they're gone, you know, by this strange illness. And there's going to be a lot of trauma happening because of it. And you know, starting from probably next week or even this week, you know, it's like a lot of anniversary for people going into lockdown and it's kicking in in this country, you know. And so it's going to be a really difficult, I think, next sort of 6 months for so many people in this country with their grief and knowing where to put that.
It's that, like you say, you're angry at the world and it'd be easy to lash out and take it out on other people. You know, you just be a prick to everybody. You know, well, my dad got murdered, so I'm just going to, that's it. And you'd have every right to be that angry and that and want and just need some kind of just fucking, not vengeance, but I need payment for what you fucking took from me.
Yeah.
And that, to be able to deal with that takes such an inner strength that I don't know many people that would do that. We'd be able to do that, you know, and stay as focused as you seem to be.
It's really strange how, I mean, I don't go to church and stuff like that, but I've always been quite spiritual in terms of feeling something else, you know, it's pushed me along or guided me or, you know, whispered in my ear and said, look, maybe do that instead of that, you know. I don't know. There's something always been driven inside of me that's kind of just said, look, you know, I'm always here anyway. You know, and I do, I, in a strange way, I do feel his presence. And I sort of say that if I want to ask a question, you know, hopefully sometimes he can give me a silent answer. But yeah, it's, you know, and that's why throughout my sort of teenage years, I didn't know how to address how I was feeling, but I sort of had an inner feeling that I had to do something about it. On my own, like I said, by making peace with the situation. But it still continues to, you know, manifest itself in many ways throughout my life, you know, and it always will. It always will. And thankfully, my wife's quite understanding, and she's very like, listen, you have to understand. You've gone through this unimaginable trauma as a child. And, you know, where is that going to go? How are you going to deal with it? And I think that's why I wanted to sort of try and channel that by, you know, writing a children's book for kids about it. And also my own podcast talking about it, because I always say it's sort of a cathartic process for probably a bit like you in a way, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're talking to people about a similar situation or someone that's felt the same pain. And and it's just a way of kind of, just talking about how you're feeling and hopefully helping others who are listening.
Well, that's it. I get a buzz out of talking about mine stems from shitty behaviour when I was growing up. You know, I wasn't a great guy in relationships and things like that. But and now I've kind of found who I am and the better side of me. Now I feel great talking to other men that have been in similar situations, like cheating on partners and all that sort of thing. So yeah, there is that buzz of going, mate, look, I get it, right? We fucked up, but let's not fuck up anymore. Let's going forward.
Yeah.
Let's keep talking about it and tell other people about it, and we'll gather this. It's like at school when you'd walk around the playground gathering people to play, you know, who wants to play war or whatever you were doing. You were gathering people, and you feel like I'm doing that. And with the conversation with people, because like I say, I've never really experienced grief, not yet. I've had granddads that died when I was a kid, but I wasn't really close to them. And my best mate's mum passed away about 18 years ago. But again, we weren't really close. So I haven't had that. And so talking to you and my partner and getting an understanding of what it feels like, you know, and what happens, not just to you, but your family as well, like your mum.
Yeah.
Like, how did your mum cope with it? How did, you know, that's... I don't even know the questions to ask.
That's probably why it was so emotional when I became a dad myself, you know, and I had Otis for the first time. There were so many different emotions that I was feeling because, well, not only was I a dad myself, but I also had a son. And I thought, okay, well, this is, you know, the relationship that I have with him. I always kind of channel those sorts of things that I remember us doing and sort of the kind of relationship that we had in a positive way into our relationship. But also what does hurt is putting myself in the mindset of all of a sudden being left to look after three children and, you know, having to navigate all of that as well as my own grief and my own trauma like my mum must have had to do. And she's just, you know, incredibly strong, incredibly resilient. More often than not, I have to remind myself about that with her and just think, wow, you know. Mm. There are so many people out there who are having to experience that, unfortunately. And you know, it's just finding those little tools to get through it and continue with life, you know. And that's the big thing, isn't it? And you know, again, with mental health, it's like finding those little nuggets of positivity or thing, you know, the passion that we have to still be here that keep us going. And it is amazing how my mum sort of found that.
Yeah, to keep you lot buoyed at the same time as being broken into a million pieces is again shows some incredible inner strength. And but it must have, did it bring the rest of you together after what had gone on, or did it cause any grief, like any problems kind of?
I think my sister was 4 years younger than me, and then my older sister was about 6 years older. So she was about 17, I think, when he died. And so it kind of brought us together, but at the same time, it was back in 1992. So we kind of, you know, there was still even then that conversation of, oh, let's talk about our feelings and stuff, you know. So
yeah,
I wouldn't say, I one of the maybe big regrets is that we didn't come together more and share our feelings and where we were at.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I think about it, when you've gone through such a big trauma, it's quite rare that maybe you would all come together and talk like that, you know? It's like not until a couple of years later.
Yeah. It's you all sort of, because at the end of the day, you are family, but you're individuals as well. And you deal with it in your own individual way. And that might not necessarily be, let's all gather in a room and talk about it. You know, you kind of have to, like you said, you process it in your own way, don't you? And get
yourself. You're supposed to sit in your own way, and also that's what a lot of people need to realise as well, that just because, you know, someone's died for you, your grief is different to mine. You will experience it in different ways. Everyday life will be different to me. But you are experiencing it, you know. And so that's kind of why I always say that, you know, no grief is the same. Like, your grief is your grief, but I do feel your pain, you know. So it's not, I'm always conscious of not telling people how to grieve, you know, because there's no set formula to it.
No.
Yeah.
But it's that, and when people, you know, they say, oh, they're always with you. And I never really understood that before, because I took it at a base level, kind of what they're like, sort of like a ghost, like floating around you. But you're like, no, they're in your the love that you felt from that person is in you still. The pictures that you remember of, you know, the memories that you have there, and that's what people meant, is it, that you're carrying this little satchel around of love and memories, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I think that's why. Again, it's like, I'm just so passionate about talking about it, because you tell people want to remember the loved ones that have died. They want to remember those special memories. They want to talk about them. And that's why with children, you know, it's important to kind of get them to draw a picture, express how they're feeling. You know, if it's not talking about them, then draw a picture or something like that. You know, because more often than not, they want to remember them and remember those special memories. And at the end of the day, it's the love that you carry for them, isn't it?
Exactly.
That's what you will always hold. So it's really important that people understand that, I think.
Yeah, and I think it's really important. Like you said, it's different for each individual. Different. It's a different kind of grief that you're experiencing, no one's ever said that before. You just kind of go grief. They go to five stages of whatever, and, you know, it's the same pattern. And you're the first person I've spoken to that's gone, no, it's different for everybody, and you know.
Well, and again, the five stages were Elizabeth Kubler-Ross back in the late 70s. She put that together in terms of the work that she did around grief. But even she was kind of misconstrued in terms of how she meant. She did mean that you will come across it, you know, at some point, and it's not like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and you're done. And I think as well after that, it's, you know, there's unexpressed and mismanaged grief as well. So if you've kind of not approached maybe all of those feelings at some point, then later on after the grieving process, you're going to have some struggles, you know, and encounter those feelings that a lot of people do when they haven't addressed it properly.
Yeah.
You know, a bit like me, you know, I'm part of that. I'm part of the unexpressed and mismanaged grief, because for many years I didn't talk about it. You know, it's like my mid-20s. I thought, okay, I'm going to revisit counselling. I'm going to go and talk to someone. And I went to cruise and talked to someone there for like 6 weeks. And it was really helpful. And I just realised I had all this shit still in my head. Mm. And then I was fine for many years. And then, you know, 2017, I was asked to write an article for The Guardian, and that was massively cathartic. Firstly, because I had to delve into all the newspaper clippings and what actually happened, and it was really painful. Wow. It was painful because I had to, you know, I had to read about what the guy did, and, you know, all the little intricate details of, oh, he went to a local supermarket and he stole the boning knife and then he went back and all of this stuff, you know. And so writing about that was a bit like a healing process, I guess, but sharing it as well kind of opened where we are today, really, because it sort of made me realize off the back of that article, people got in touch and said, oh, I completely feel what you're feeling. I've been experienced this. It just kind of kickstarted the conversation for me personally of just wanting to share about it more and more.
Yeah, and I think that's the important bit is the sharing, and not just so you can get it out of you and ease your pressure and ease your pain, but to show to people that they aren't alone, and you know, because there is that tendency to sort of shut down and go, I'm the only one that's feeling this way, and I feel shit for feeling this way sometimes, and I don't know what to do with it. I know with my partner, there are different anniversaries throughout the year. So there's a birthday, and then there's a day they found she was ill, and then the day she passed, and I always it's because I forget which one's which, and I get and then I forget that And I'll forget that it, because I'm like, well, that was her birthday. That's when she died. So, but then there's other ones as well. And sometimes my partner would be, she'd be angry and kicking off. I'm like, oh, why are you kicking off now? I thought we were fine. What's going on? Mm. And then later on you go, oh shit. Oh yeah, that was the anniversary. And you have to, and so with her, if she should be able to tell, be more vocal about it. So then I can understand what's going on. Do you know what I mean? So these conversations are very important.
I think it goes both ways.
Yeah.
You know, if when I first met my wife, I didn't really talk about what happened to my dad, and that had always been my approach, really. I think mainly because I didn't want to upset her as well as obviously upsetting me, because I think for my story, when you tell anyone, it's not, you know, it's not a nice story to tell anyone, and it's not a nice one to talk about, really. So it's not like, oh yeah, my dad was murdered and such and such, and you know, she's like, oh great, okay. But so yeah, I wouldn't talk about it for a long time, and she maybe didn't know how to approach it with me. So after sort of a few years of being together, she slowly kind of started to see the signs, and you know. I would also say, oh, this is the anniversary of my dad's death, you know, on the 12th of May every year. That is the day for me that really stands out, because, you know, all of those vivid memories and the actual, you know, and it's weird. It's like the smell in the air, you know, it gets hotter in May, so you feel that sort of temperature change and, you know, all of these little details. And so, yeah, I think what I'm saying is, yeah, through me communicating to her and saying, look, I'm having a shit day today.
Yeah.
I'm feeling it. And
I'm
being open with her so she can actually say something to me or try and help me. She doesn't, you know, sometimes she won't. She might just leave me to it. And she's got to the point now, which is great, where she'll just say, look, well, what would you like me to do for you? Do you need me to do anything? Or do you want to be left alone? Shall I take the kids out and you just... you know, have a bit of a quiet one at home, or, you know, because more sometimes I might just say, no, I want to come.
Yeah.
Whatever you're doing. So last year we went out and wrote notes on balloons, let them off.
Nice.
The kid, each, like Otis wrote a note and then Thea wrote a note. And then we went to the field, actually, where the magical wood, my children's bereavement book, where the sort of the inspiration came from. There's this big tree. And we went to the tree and we let the balloons off. At first they got stuck in a tree and they wouldn't go off. It was quite funny. and then all of a sudden it's like this gust of wind sort of took them off. And we just, you know, it was amazing for the kids to be involved in that.
Yeah.
And in the morning they suggested, let's set a place for Grandpa
and nice.
You know. So if I hadn't said anything to them either the day before, because I remember saying, oh, it's the anniversary of Grandpa's death tomorrow. And they were like, oh, okay. So they kind of thought about it a little bit. And then they were like, well, maybe we should have a breakfast. Like, because normally we'll have pancakes or something, you know, on someone's birthday or Christmas, whatever. And they were like, oh, should we have pancakes? No. And I was like, okay. So then they were like, well, let's set a place for him. So... I think, what I'm trying to say, the communication thing is so key, especially when you're talking to your kids as well.
Yeah.
You know, just sort of integrating them to everyday situations and, you know, just letting them be part of the memory.
Yeah.
It's part of that legacy thing as well, which is really nice.
Yeah. And I think it's the communication thing is very important. But sometimes, you know, I'm only speaking from my experience, my partner would be like, I shouldn't have to tell you. You should... I don't actually know why I'm angry. I haven't really processed it. I'm just pissed off today.
Mm.
And then you should know, because I've fucking told you enough times. And it, you know what I mean? And it, there's some, and then it's like, well, what can I do? It's like, I just want you to know. I just want you to know without me telling you what's happening. I want you to, and then I want you to do something that I don't know what you want to do. I don't know what I want you to do.
Yeah.
I want you to do something. and if it comes a bit tense and it, you know, but it's going to happen.
It's so hard, isn't it? And I think it's allowing her to feel like that.
And just
recognizing it, and just, you know, however you, I guess, it's a bit like, well, like you say, she probably won't let you say that, but, you know, what can I do for you?
Yeah.
What can I do to help? You know, if I can't, then that's fine, or I'll step back and I'll just leave you to it, you know. But
yeah,
it's really difficult to help navigate, when you can't see the signs or navigate it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that, especially when you're caught up in your own bullshit and whatever's going on, and especially this year with everything that's happening, you know, things sort of fall by the wayside, and you just forget for a minute, and you look like you don't care, and it's like, no, I do. I'm really sorry. I just got lost for a minute, but I do care, and you know. And then she does say, she goes, I can't tell you how it's going to feel until you experience it yourself. You just won't know. You just won't know. And like you said, and it's, that's why I'm all about. Like you said just now about, you may not believe in God, or you believe in something. There is something there that you kind of talk to now and again. And I'm the same. It's not the traditional picture of a man in the clouds of his beard and he's sitting on this big throne, but there's an energy that I think you kind of connect with.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the energy.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm a believer in the energy. And when you pass on, that energy in you goes somewhere. I back into the universe, and you become part of the universe. Because I saw it. I used to work in old people's home, and I saw this guy take his last breath. And I don't know if it was just because the sun went behind clouds, maybe, I don't know, but the room dimmed when he left.
Yeah.
And it made me go, wow, it's like it goes somewhere. Do you know what I mean? And
I mean, it's amazing, because 5 weeks ago when my father-in-law died, and he... You know, there'd been about 6 months up until he died. And they said one minute he just took a breath, like, and then he went, you know. And it's not that. And I had a really interesting podcast interview with Catherine Mannix, who's this amazing end of life sort of doctor.
Yeah.
And she just said, it's not all just like traumatic.
No.
You know, one minute they're there, and the next minute it's like they've gone to sleep. And
Yeah.
There is something about energy that I feel, and I think that's maybe why I've always felt it. You know, and it doesn't have to be, you know, and it's all well and good. And I'm not, you know, one to preach either to anybody, who, you know, if in any religion, you know, it's just a feeling I have and my own outlook. But there's definitely something guiding us along sometimes. Yeah.
And I think that when they talk about putting, you know, if you put positive energy out into the universe, you'll get positivity back. And I know that sounds maybe hippy dippy, and it's only happened to me in the last couple of years where I've been more positive myself, and there is more positivity around me. And so, there is that feeling of energy. And sometimes I might just go like, I could do that, just easing off a little bit, that shit bit. And then it does. And I don't know if it's something I've done or the universe is just moving stuff around. It's a funny one, isn't it?
And
have you felt that with
this podcast?
Definitely.
You know,
how
positive it is, and, you know, having these conversations with so many different sort of people from different walks of life.
Oh, for sure. These are questions, like talking to you, I've been looking at, you know, before, as you do as well with yours, you kind of, you know, you look into who the person is and interesting stuff about them. And I was just getting lost in your stuff. I was like, wow, this is considering something so unimaginably awful happening to you. So much beauty has grown from that. Like this incredible tree of love has grown from that awful, that awful seed of hatred and awfulness.
Yeah,
it's inspiring, and it makes me. And I wouldn't have had that conversation with you if I hadn't done this podcast. You know, and talking about death as well. You can't really do it. It's difficult to do it. This is a safe space for me to go, look, I know these questions might be clunky, but this is this is what I want to know. You know, I want to know. Yeah. I want to know.
Well, that's what drives you. And that's what people listen to, isn't it? That's why they listen. That's why they want to listen to a podcast. It's like, you know, there's an openness between two people with the conversations that they're having, and exploring just those, you know, little nuggets of somebody's personality or what made them do something, or, you know, because sometimes I don't even realize it myself, of like where I am today, how I got here. And that letter you mentioned there, the 12-year-old self, that I just decided to sit down one day and write to myself, was kind of a, well, okay, so I've got from A you know, from this hugely traumatic event to where I am today. And it's sort of really, actually a few people have contacted me, so well, I've written, off the back of reading yours, I've decided to go and do mine, because it's a really useful tool. It's just sort of, you know, it does make you realize that through this awful time, you've traveled through this dark tunnel, and there was this light at the end, you know, which is where you are today, and you can get there. And I think that's why the message is so powerful, really, is because it's not saying that all of a sudden I was all right, you know, because I wasn't, you know. I had to go through a lot of shit and internal trauma and all that stuff, but I've sort of managed to be driven and I think find a passion. I think passion is huge, you know, especially when you've, for anybody, if they're thinking suicidal thoughts, if they're, you know, if they experienced not just death, but trauma in other aspects, you know, when they're a child or as an adult, you know, you have to find that spark in something in life to keep going.
Absolutely.
Know?
Yeah.
And if you don't, then, you know, unfortunately, you're fucked.
Yeah, pretty much. It's trying to find something else that will keep you up, you know, keep you going, keep you buoyed. And it's funny, writing the letter to your younger self, there is, I've had a conversation with someone before, not on here, but in before the podcast, before comedy, and it was, they had all these thoughts and feelings that they needed to tell someone that was no longer here. And so they wrote the letter, and then we went and had a bonfire on a beach, and then we just put the letter on the bonfire, and then watching, it was weird. It's like you could actually see the letters and the words going up into the smoke and out into the universe. And the person said, they felt so much relief that they'd got it out of themselves.
Yeah.
And then they basically sent it to wherever the person is. And they kind of went, yeah, I know that person's seen it, and they now know how I was feeling. And so that was the same with your letter to yourself.
Yeah, it's really cathartic. It was a really, you know, I think it just made me, it does make you realize all these little things that you've achieved, however big or small, are massive, you know, and no matter who you are, whatever you've done, you know, in your career, family life, whatever it is, you know, it's just, you have to be proud of just finding the strength to do those things.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And I love the sort of putting it in a fire and lighting it. Actually, it reminded me of, have you seen The Last Dance on Netflix with Michael Jordan?
No.
Documentary.
I started basketball. To watch it. I haven't finished it yet. Yeah.
Yeah. But the coach, I've forgotten his name, is amazing. At the end of all their season, like end of the program, he gets them all together and they write something. They put it in a oil can. I think it's like an ancient Indian sort of tradition.
Yeah.
And you watch it, kind of watch these flames and everything go up. And it's like a really, you know, it's quite... it's an interesting thing to do emotionally, I think.
Yeah, well, like you say, it gets that out of you. So that doesn't become a hard nugget of something awful later on. Because that's something as well, people don't realise that if you suppress all this stuff, you're going to make yourself ill. And it will manifest in physical illnesses, you know? So it's important to communicate and get it off your chest, you know?
It's just finding other things. I mean, I've started... I hate running, but I started running. Every other day I'm doing it, but I just realized that just moving and doing something, you know, first thing in the morning does just, you know, just help your body, you know, get that nervous ball of energy if you've got one, you know. And just there's lots of little things that you can do, but
But it's this, like, it's this misunderstanding that people have to completely change their lives and they have to get a whole running kit and go to the gym and it's the only way you're gonna. It's like, no, when people say, like you said, passion, when you say find something you're passionate about, it could be music, just throw yourself into listening to music or drawing or reading, or it could be anything, whatever it is that makes you feel better,
anything that's a release.
It's so important, that key word, find passion in something else, is perfect. It's exactly what you need to do. And it's, and I will say, you've got good tasting trainers, by the way. You can tell a lot about people by their shoes.
I say that too.
I'm terrible at it. You can judge straight away.
My wife's dismay, but yeah.
I always, when I meet someone, I can't help it. I go shoes first, and then I go eyes. And that's
when I first moved from London to Bristol, I remember I had to kind of cull a load of my Nike Air Maxes because I just had too many. And she was just like, look, you can't move in and have all of those. So I've sort of treat myself every now and then, you know. Yeah.
But you found a passion. That's the thing.
I found a passion. Expensive passion.
I know. So people come into my flat and they're like, are you a centipede? This is mad. They're all up the stairs. It's thousands. It's ridiculous,
yeah, like
isn't it? Yeah, yeah. But do you find it difficult when, because in the news, now there's a story in the news that the poor girl, something awful happened to her, and how do you feel about that? When those stories come up, it must poke a hole in what you've built up. And how do you know what
last
that?
Yeah, last night I was talking to Simone about it actually, and just the thought that one minute someone was there walking along home, and the next minute someone's decided to snatch them away and their life, you know, and that's just, it's just horrendous, you know, how one person can think like that. And yeah, I guess when I see something in the news like that, it does sort of resonate, you know, obviously for her, but for her family.
Mm. Yeah.
That was the big thing that popped into my head last night was, her poor fucking family and how they're feeling today. Because I would imagine she was, you know, on the phone to them that day, having a normal conversation, you know, like I experienced, you know, just, yeah, see you later, have a good day, gone, you know.
And then you can't, and it must be really hard to comprehend that they're not there anymore. Like you get like, oh, I can't. I can't get my head around how it must feel.
That's the thing that hurt the most, really, was because, I mean, me and my dad used to go and play sport together with that classic sort of father and son thing. You know, we'd go and play football, or he'd take me to football. We'd go and play tennis and do a lot of those things sort of together. He'd take me out onto the green outside our house and, you know, teach me how to trap footballs, you know, stuff like that. And so, all of a sudden, for that to be gone, was terrible. And for a couple of years, I'd sort of knocked sport on the head, and I didn't want to do it. You know, I remember my PE teacher coming up to me and saying, "Oh, why aren't you playing football?" I was like, "I don't want to play it." You know, he was like, "Well, it was rugby." He was like, "Why aren't you playing rugby?" I said, "I don't want to play rugby." And he goes, "Well, you're not going to be able to play football then." You know. And it was, I was like, hang on. I do realise that about a year ago, my dad was, you know, killed and, you know, all of this stuff. And so, yeah, when someone just disappears and they're gone from your life, there are so many things that you just don't want to do anymore because they remind you and they're painful. And I guess for anyone even that, you know, experienced, you know, a death 20 years ago, a song can trigger emotions and it could be anything. And I think that's why grief never leaves, really. It's because it's ever present in the reminders of them being in your life. And so, for that poor girl's family, you know, they're going to be going through all of that right now. And it's just horrendous.
Yeah. You know? And then you've got now we've got social media, and now there's conversations, you know, the guy is going, it's not all men, and then you go, yeah, but it is men, and it's something that us other men have to deal with. We have to, you know, I tweeted about it today because I'm a few years ago I was at a comedy festival, and there was a comic with us, and she was a woman, and she stood up and she went, I have to go because unlike you lot, I have to worry about getting raped and murdered on the way home. And I went, well, men get raped as well. You know, I did that bullshit thing. And then it wasn't until later on someone went, yeah, by men. It's men. Men do it. You know, it's not stories of men walking home casually and getting dragged in a car and murdered. It's always men that do it. And that's why we should be having these conversations and picking up on shitty behaviour from friends or people, that, you know, if you see it. And
yeah,
you know?
I think you're right. Then you need to call them up on it and just say, you do realise what you just said, however you said it, however small you think it is, you know.
Yeah.
sometimes to somebody else.
Yeah. Sometimes you'll hear, I've heard men talking, the way they talk about women, and I'm like, wow, are we in the 70s still? This is, they're not talking about them as people. It's just like, you know, I'm going to go out on a pool tonight. There's loads of girls in this bar or wherever. I'm going to go and get one of them. And you're like, oh my God. Yeah. Have you not been paying attention to anything, mate?
It's crazy. Yeah. It's mad. It's mad how still today. But that's, I don't know. That's kind of something that they feel within their group, within their friendship group, whatever it is, their family life, that it's still an ever-present, you know, okay thing to talk about. And it's not something, it's an easy educate, I think. It's just something you have to really keep going at. But like, you know, like the whole racism thing as well, you know, which this week has been massive, you know, it's the same thing. It's like, okay, the conversation won't go away. You have to keep talking about it.
Yeah.
And
well, this is the thing. I had it last week with a family member. We were talking about something. I was talking about the vaccines, and they started to tell me that it was like, well, you know, people from different ethnicities are getting more affected by this, that, and the other. And I'm like, but a lot of those people are frontline workers. It's not really to do with their ethnicity. It's because they're frontline workers, so of course they're getting affected more. But that's not the point. It's like they go, oh, yeah, they're getting it first, and blah, and it was always they and them. And then they said all lives matter. And I had to stop and go, isn't that? It's not, of course, all lives matter, but it's not all lives that are getting stomped on by the police. And it's not all lives that are getting killed for no reason. And it's systemic. And I know that comes up a lot, but we were talking about, I was like, you don't see many black people stood outside stately homes of their ancestors. You know, that's what I'm saying. The whole system is rigged against people of colour. And that's what we need to be talking about, you know?
Yeah, I watched a really interesting documentary on iPlayer last night. And it was from Naga from BBC News. And there was a Chinese girl who was a student in Edinburgh, I believe. And the racism that she's received because of the coronavirus over the last year. You know, and the sort of the ignorance of people just thinking, okay, it's your fault. Yeah. It might have been originated from China, but that doesn't mean that it's that person's fault, you know.
Yeah.
And it doesn't give you the right to go and be racist to them and call them all the words under the sun, you know. And it's just, I don't get how, and while social media obviously plays a big part of that, how people think that they can just write a few sentences and talk to them like they're shit.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't go up to them on the street and talk to them like that.
No, of course not.
And so,
No, go on. Yeah.
No, I was going to say, it's just, there's a big problem. And it's still there and it's still in the background.
Yeah.
However much you might say it's not. And like you say, it's when the sort of the all lives matter, you know, it's not really truly thinking about what is the issue.
No, exactly. They're just taking it at face value and like, why are they getting all this attention? White people die as well, and you're like, but that's not what we're saying. They don't die at the hands of others in horrific ways, you know. In the same way, the amount of times I get looked at, it's just like, oh, why are you banging on about it? And you're like, because I have to. Because I have to. That's how I feel. I feel we have to. And it's never going to, unfortunately, it feels like we're at the very beginning of the conversation still, after all this time. My family are from Brixton, so I remember the riots. I remember watching the riots as a kid.
Yeah.
Not understanding what was going on, but knowing it was happening. And, you know, so even back then and before that, you know, hundreds of years. But we're only now, it feels, starting that conversation.
I mean, it's a different strand. My children are mixed race, and so 2015 I started writing the children's books for them, essentially, and so they are the characters in the books.
Yeah, right.
And then after doing a bit of research, I was like, there's no children's characters in the mainstream bookstores that are BAME or mixed race, and you know. So my children wouldn't be able to go into a bookshop and see someone like them in a book, you know.
Yeah.
And so that kind of spurred me on to want to write them. So I've written sort of two books for them each. But even today, I've sat on a panel in, I think, 2018 in London for the SILIP sort of society, Library Society, to try and sort of think about how the voting could be more diverse. And that was 2018. And now we're not really any far on. And it's because there's still not an urgency or realizing how urgent it is to change this. But that goes hand in hand with so many other elements of racism, really, doesn't it?
We need more diversity on TV and we need more diversity on this and that, and you go, no, we need more diversity behind the scenes as well. This is still white people calling the shots. This is still white people saying, oh, we need a black person for this show and we need a Chinese person for that. And da, da, da. You're like, you lot need to change. That's when we make changes up front. That's,
yeah,
you know, and those conversations aren't happening yet. But no. It just seems like a lot of people trying to hang on to their jobs. You know, it's like, oh, look, this is all black people. This is all women. And like, yeah, but this office isn't. Look at this office. This is not diverse at
it's
all.
So true.
Yeah. So it's, you know, but, you know, I don't, all we can do, like we've said, is have these conversations. So, but
exactly.
You know, I'm glad you're in the place that you're at. It's after everything you've gone through, to be where you're at and doing the work you do, your podcasts and your books, and I'm not kissing your ass, but it really is inspirational, and I'm really glad that I got to talk to you.
Thank you, mate.
I really
appreciate that.
It's been great, man.
I mean, it's nice to hear as well. Sometimes you don't always think about it, you know.
Yeah.
You just think you've experienced something, and now you're trying to make a little difference about it, but you don't always. Maybe it's the being modest in me, not wanting to recognise it as much, you know. But the letter to my 12-year-old self, I guess, was that kind of pat on the back to say, you know, you are where you are, and you should be proud about that. And I think that goes for so many people. Hopefully, a lot of people listening as well. Just, you know, just thinking how far you've come since whatever it was that turned your life around, you know, in a negative way, and how you've treated it as a positive. And a lot of people need to realise that more, I think, you know, it's that sort of giving yourself a pat on the back.
Yeah, absolutely. Know? Absolutely. Yeah. And all power to you, man. It's been an absolute joy. And thank you. And I apologise if it might be clunky in places. I don't, you know, I'm a comedian by trade. This is all new to me. I'm trying to navigate this new world. And sometimes I get it wrong. Sometimes I'm so interested. I'm like, I'll try not to talk over you, but I'm like, I've got this to ask you as well while I'm listening to what you say. So I apologise if that's happened.
These are the best conversations, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, these ones. It's been a joy. Where can we find you online?
So you can find me on Instagram at Mark Lemon Official. You can find our website, lemondropbooks.co.uk, and that's where all our children's books are. I'm a little bit on Twitter, but not hugely. I guess mainly Instagram and our website.
Excellent stuff. Mark, it's been an absolute joy. And thank you for sorting out all your stalls and getting the sound right. Well, when I hear producer Paul, guys going, oh, can you do that? I'm like, oh, God, I couldn't ask that. I'd just put wherever you were at, I'd go, yeah, that'd do. Good on
That's
you.
That's what he's here for. No, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Mark.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress Manicure and Press-On Falsies.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.